Bluegrass Music to You. Hosted by Darwin Davidson, with lots of help from Karen Mulford, Marilyn Ryan, Paul Anderson, and other hosts, it all happens every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on Community Radio. That's WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online at WERU.org. We look forward to seeing you every Thursday.
Support for WERU comes from our listeners, volunteers, business supporters, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. To find out what you can do to support community radio, go to weru.org. Thank you.
You're listening to WERU. You've heard that it is 89.9 in Blue Hill and 99.9 in Bangor, streaming at weru.org. About a minute before the hour, time to take a quick look at the weather. A slight chance of snow after 11, cloudy with a high near 32, east winds around 7 miles an hour, chance of precipitation 20%. We have a freezing drizzle likely possibly mixed with snow, and that creates a winter weather advisory and hazardous weather outlook. So for tonight, look for that freezing sleet and rain before 1 a.m., then freezing rain and sleet likely between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m., then rain, freezing rain, and slight sleet likely after 4 a.m. Patchy fog, otherwise cloudy tonight with a low around 28, east wind around 10 miles an hour with gusts as high as 20 miles an hour. Chances of precipitation 70%, pretty high, so chances are good that there will be precipitation tonight. Probably freezing, sleety, slippery, rainy. Tomorrow, rain mainly before 1 p.m., then scattered showers after 2 p.m., high near 48, looking a little better. It's just about 10 o'clock, and it's time for Pet Sounds 2.0.
Good morning. This is Dr. John Hunt for Pet Sounds 2.0. This is our new monthly live call-in show. It's an expansion of my Sunday morning short, Pet Sounds. That's why I call it 2.0. What we do is we expand on some of the topics I have been talking about for the last 4 to 5 years. And I have usually a guest with me to talk about a particular topic. Today, I just want to plug again the Pet Sounds. It's Sunday morning at 7:30. It's about a 3 to 5 minute spot. And all those people, listeners who are awake at that time, try to listen in. Today, we're talking about pets and the law, how the legal system looks at pets and different aspects. And I have with me, my guest is a good friend of mine, a former client, and a lawyer, Christina Perkins. And she is here with a friend that she's going to tell us a little bit about in the studio with us. But good morning, Christina. How are you?
Good morning, John.
Tell me a little bit about, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. And
I am indeed a lawyer and a former client of yours. And I practice in Ellsworth. My practice includes estate planning for pets. And I've seen an increase in that in recent years. I do a lot of real estate, family law, probate law, and I also rescue animals, as you know.
Yes, and do a great job. And you have Rye with you here today?
Yes, your second guest today is Rye.
I think Rye will not probably be contributing to the conversation, but keeping us company.
She's a little shy, yes.
Oh, yes. She's sniffing me right now. you just saw Rye, something in her mouth. Some kind of capsule. So just a reminder to our pet owners that always be aware of what's left around the house so dogs don't get into things. With the law, there are many, many different aspects. But today I just want to remind the listeners that we're not here to offer advice that's not legal or not
Well, let me jump in. Anything Please. I say is not to be taken as legal advice. There's no attorney-client relationship established. Don't try this at home, in other words, okay. And call a lawyer if you have specific questions.
So we're just going to try to address certain areas that I've chosen, and just talk, just make sure to let the listeners know that there is a lot of legal aspects to our pets. We're going to talk about pets and wills, divorce and pets, and maybe dog bites, and we have a lot of other topics that we can cover. I want to remind listeners that this is a live show. It's a call-in, and you can call in at 207-466-0500. 469, I'm sorry. That was my error. So, repeat, 207-469-0500. Please call in when you have a thought or contribution, but in the meantime, we'll start talking. One of the things about one of the main things a lot of listeners need to remember is that the law looks at pets as property, and that sometimes seems unfair. But I have been reading up on stuff, and it seems like the legal system is beginning to look at pets more than just property. Do you think that's right, or is that just me wishing?
That's you wishing, and that's me wishing. I think the way that the law treats animals is changing. I'm not so sure that the legal status of animals is changing quickly enough for those of us who feel it should. And, you know, being property also has its advantages. I mean, if I sue someone because they damaged my property, my dog, my cat, my horse, I may have some remedies available that I otherwise would not have. So being property isn't all, you know, it's not entirely bad. It's, you know, animals, it's difficult because the status of property provides protections, you know, in forms of anti-cruelty statutes, all of those things. But yes, it makes it difficult in divorce situation, in estate planning situations, you know, bite situations. It's difficult. But of course, those of us who advocate for a change often get told, well, they can't get driver's license and they shouldn't have the right to vote. So they're sort of in between humans and property. And I don't know that we've really come up with a good way to classify animals at this point.
Would it be fair to say, though, a lot of our pet owners are kind of aghast at the legal system saying, your pet's just property, and that's very hurtful.
Oh yes.
But try to get over that and try to understand where they're coming from, the legal system, and hopefully their attorney will be able to say, okay, but we can work with it.
Right. The legal system isn't perfect. It has categories. It has to have them to make it work. It's a work in progress. And, when I meet with a client and I say, you know, let's say it's a divorce, and I talk about property division and we get to the pets, people are very offended by that. And I understand that, but it is what it is for the time being until we make other changes. And, you know, people can always call the legislators and advocate for change.
And that's how you change laws.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Let's talk a little bit about wills. Believe it or not, 12% of people have pets in their wills. We used to, the traditional view of pets and wills is a really rich woman, a billionaire leaving millions of dollars to Poopsie, and that's kind of the classic, but that's no longer the case. It's just not for rich people. Because pets are property, the law looks at that legally you can't leave property like money to property, like a pet.
Right.
So that's the problem. So you can't leave money to pets. So
Not directly.
So one of the options is, as I've been reading, creating a trust. And what do you think that's a good idea?
That depends. I'll give you the famous lawyer answer. It depends.
Okay.
But let me back up a little.
I mean, I wouldn't expect any other answer.
Most, you know, or a lot of Americans don't have an estate plan. And when I say estate plan, I mean a will, a trust, powers of attorney, healthcare directives, or all of those. So the number, I think it's only like 30% of Americans that think ahead and develop an estate plan. So that's the first issue. That also impacts pets. With respect to trusts, Maine does have a statutory pet trust now. In the old days, we would have what we call honorary trusts, which means you had to rely on a person to kind of do the right thing and spend the money wisely according to your wishes and things like that.
So, but they're not bound by law.
No, it's
the
honorary.
The honorary trust.
Right.
Okay, so that's
right.
that's a little
right.
hitch.
Yes, okay. yes. So I think ours, gosh, I think it was back in 2005, but don't quote me on that. We, Maine, adopted the statutory pet trust provisions. And what that means is the animal is still considered property, but the animal can be a beneficiary, in quotation marks, of the trust. So you can leave, it's actually called a trust for the care of animals. So you can leave money to a trust, which, if people don't know what a trust is, it's a separate entity that is created either during life, that's a living trust, or a testamentary trust in a will. That's a testamentary trust that gets created upon the death of the testator. So you can leave money to this trust for the care of animals. Yes.
But
not millions usually, unless you have a lot of animals. I mean, you have to be
reasonable.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So the you have to make sure that there's provisions with that money gift to make sure that the is set aside for specific things, right?
Yeah, pet trusts are complicated, as any trust is. So you want to make sure you have enough money, but not too much money. You need a trustee. You need someone that you can trust that will enforce and implement your wishes. Sometimes we write in a trust protector, which is sort of an overseer of the trustee.
Right, it's kind of checking up on
right.
the trustee.
You got that. So you have that, and then you have to decide, well, does the trustee want to be paid? Does the trustee need to be paid? And then you want to put in provisions about, well, where's the pet going to live? What happens if the pet gets sick? You know, how far will you go in veterinary treatments? You know, all of those things. Who makes the, usually it would be the trustee that makes the decisions, but, you know, this is a living being, so stuff happens, emergencies come up, and, you know, if you have a person, the trustee in charge, what if the trustee dies? What if the trustee becomes incapacitated? You know, so there's a host of questions that come up when you're looking to create a trust for your pet.
So, if our listeners, if they're thinking of that, how specific, how many things do you have to address in order to cover all those bases, or can you kind of do a sweeping thing and say the trustee caretaker can do this?
When I write trusts, I try to be as flexible as I can in the trustee's powers, just for that reason, because I don't know. I mean, if this is, you know, let's say this is for a horse. So the horse maybe is a young horse, so the horse might have 20 years of life left. I don't know what's going to happen in 20 years. I don't know what the world will be like. And so I try to give the trustee as much power and be as flexible as can be to address all of those. But you want to put in your basics. You want to put in, where's the pet going to live? What if that plan doesn't work out? Is there a backup plan? What if the pet gets cancer? How far will you go in the treatment?
So you should put those things okay, what just some guidelines.
Eat? Yeah. Okay. What does the pet eat? You know, what if there's an emergency and you really cannot, you know, the trust no longer works and you have to terminate the trust or something has to happen? What if, you know, so you want to think about those things. A lot of people, you know, get overwhelmed by all the questions. Number one, they think, well, I don't have any money. Well, you know, a lot of us don't, or not very much. So you want to think about within your means and your resources and start there. You know, some of my clients have funded it with an inexpensive term life policy that pays into the pet trust on death. You know, some people can afford that, others can't. For some, it might be, okay, I want the dog to go back to the rescue group I adopted the dog from, but I want the pet to have money. So there's a trust that leaves money to the pet, but the pet lives with the rescue group, kind of a thing, you know.
Okay. I read a legal term, since I'm not a lawyer, the perpetuity?
How do you call it the RAP, the rules against perpetuities.
A perpetuity.
Yes. Call it the RAP.
I can pronounce all sorts of medical terms, but I can't.
Which I can't, by the way.
And that had to do with trust terminating within 21 years, and that gets complicated with pets. And then there was a uniform probate code that may have been a state thing, may not be in Maine. That
we've adopted that, probably most provisions of the Uniform Probate Code.
So yes. The money goes to the pet care. The trust terminates earlier than 21 years, allowing the life of the animal to be less than 21.
Right. That's an old trust concept.
Okay.
And they tell us in law school, if you don't understand it in law school, stop trying because you'll never understand it. Just, stop trying. That really is not as important as it used to be because we have the statutory pet trust provisions now. So there really is no, I can't think of a legitimate reason to write an honorary pet trust in Maine because, getting back to the enforcement provisions, and it's honorary, so nobody is bound by anything except honor, to enforce these and to implement them and to abide by them. So I would not write one these days. I would write a statutory pet trust. And the statutory pet trust in the provisions provides, it's a trust for the care of an animal. It can be for an animal that's alive at the time the person dies, or if the animal is pregnant, that animal is covered by the trust. So there is an end inside under the statutory pet trust. So the rule against perpetuities is not as critical to a statutory pet trust. I mean, you always want to put in language, what if it doesn't terminate and then. But you want to do that anyway, because if you have two cats and you have a trust for the cats and the cats die and you have, $20,000 left in the trust, you want to put some language in what happens to that money.
Okay.
And when the trust terminates. So some of that is taken away by the statutory provisions.
So for our listeners, that's kind of where you want to go, to the statutory pet trust, if you're going to a lawyer.
Well, that depends.
Okay. But the honorary possible.
It's possible.
So you need to talk to your lawyer about
it really depends. A lot of these answers depend on what kind of an animal. If you have a parrot, that's going to be a whole different discussion than if you have a cat that's 15. I don't see any reason. I like the enforcement provisions. If I can go to probate, let's say I run a rescue, I'm aware of this trust, and I don't think the trustee is doing his or her job right. So I go to probate court and I say, hey, I'm a person interested in the welfare of this animal, and somebody needs to look into this. I don't have that option with honorary trust. So that's why I prefer the statutory trust.
This is WERU in Orland, Maine. Dr. John Hunt for Pet Sounds 2.0. I'm here with an attorney, Christina Perkins. We're talking about pets and the legal system. We just finished talking about pets and wills. And one little last bit is the... not an uncommon thing for people to put in their wills to euthanize their pet. And a lot of times the motive for that is they think the pet is not going to be taken care of properly. And that's usually not the case. And even judges look at that. Am I wrong with that? Again, this is what I've been understanding.
It's actually interesting that you bring this up because I just had a discussion with my farrier about that this morning, who has a very sweet pit bull, three-legged. She had cancer. She had a leg amputated. And she has directed her children to euthanize the dog for just those very same reasons. When I have a client who wants me to write that kind of a provision in a will or a trust, I tend to try to talk them out of it. And here's why. It's against public policy. That's sort of the old-fashioned argument. But most probate in Maine is done informally. So that means the judge never gets to see it. So if I'm the PR of your estate and you tell me to euthanize your dog, and I'm a dog lover, that's why you chose me. But the dog is young, and I don't want to euthanize the dog. So you've given me no other instructions other than to euthanize the dog. I don't want to do it. I can't do it. I ethically can't do it, or I just can't get myself, I just can't do it. Then I've got the dog. Now what do I do with the dog? If I can keep the dog, I might do so. If I can't, I might, I might place the dog with a rescue. So my point in all of this is, it's really hard for somebody to euthanize a healthy dog, at least in my world. And so people tend not to want to do it. And then they find alternatives. And those alternatives may not be what you would have wanted.
Well, if it gets to a judge can overrule that request, right?
Yes, if it ever made it before the probate judge.
If they feel the dog can be cared for or adopted.
Keep in mind the dog is property, okay? So if I say, you junk my car when I die, you junk my car. If I say, kill my dog when I die, you're expected to do just that. I'm not aware of in Maine that this has ever come up, but I can't imagine a judge would say, don't kill the dog. Because remember, most probate is informal, and it never gets to the probate judge. So who's going to know, and who's going to fight it, and who's going to argue for the dog? You know, there was a case, I think it was in Tennessee, where the probate court some years ago actually appointed a guardian ad litem to determine what should happen to the dog. So similar to a guardian ad litem that advocates for children in divorces or guardianships, this guardian ad litem was appointed by the court to take the dog's best interest into consideration, but that's rare.
So when you're thinking of that, it's best to talk to your lawyer and the family, actually, about this kind of decision.
Yeah,
The times I've had that brought to me as a veterinarian, I would say 100% of the time, I wouldn't say 100%, I'd say most of the time we found alternative relatives, adoption. But I've had a couple times where I did euthanize based on court order, and I had to do that because that was a court order.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time it's not, so that's kind of the good news.
Yeah, And, as with any estate plan, I mean, you need to talk to your family. I can write you the most beautiful trust, but if you don't tell the trustee what it all means and what you really want,
doesn't work.
There's going to be a gap. Yeah, okay. So talk to the family, and for example, with my pet steer, Christopher, I have an arrangement, and if I die and he's still alive, he will go back to Farm Sanctuary. I think he'll be happy there if that happens. And you assure me that my dogs are fine when I leave and that they don't suffer because I'm not right there. I'm not sure I agree with you, but talk to the rescue group where you adopted the dog. Talk to your kids. Talk to your friends. With most of us that have non-human family members, it's a concern that, you can't predict, you can't control things from the grave. For example, with my horses, my concern is that they will end up in the slaughter pipeline because there are so many horses, you can't very often pay someone to take a horse these days.
Right.
So, I don't think anybody would intentionally send them there necessarily, but what if they end up there?
Right.
So that's always a concern. But, you can only do the best plan, and then you hope for the best, and that's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Any listener would like to call 207-469-0500. Would love to have your call and any input or questions. So we'll go on to another.
Can I just add a little bit more to that topic?
Yes, please.
And I warned you ahead of time that.
That's okay.
I would do that. I just don't want people to think that trust is the only option. I mean, you can leave your pet in, let's say I have a will and I leave you Rye. You can do that. And hopefully it's a nice person and, they'll take care of the dog or whatever other animal it might be.
It's just a will.
I leave
Rye to John and.
Yeah, you can do that.
None of this trust stuff. Okay.
Exactly. Right. So that's a simple, straightforward one.
Oh, good.
Or you could make what we call a conditional bequest or something like that. I could write something like, okay, John, I give you Rye and I give you $5,000 to care for her. But if you don't, then this happens,
Okay.
And then if you fail to take care of her, that leaves Rye in a bad position.
Right.
And you don't get the money. But there are other options one can do.
Can, using us as an example, can I refuse your request?
Yes.
In a will?
Yes.
So the will isn't forcing me.
Nope.
So I have a choice. If I say no, then what happens?
Then hopefully my attorney would have drafted a backup provision. But if for some reason the attorney didn't or there wasn't one available, then because the property would go under the rest and residue clause. So that could be a problem.
Okay. We do have a caller, John from Steuben. Good morning.
Morning. I had a question for Christine, please.
Yes.
About cats being pets. I always thought heretofore that all animals were considered property except the felines. Has this changed? Is that so here in Maine? Or
Are you asking if cats are considered property under Maine law?
Yes.
They are.
They are?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And that brings up, thank you, John. That was excellent because it kind of brings out some other exceptions. How about a pot-bellied pig that lives in the house? Is that a pet that's property too, right? Is that considered property?
Yes, all animals are property.
Okay, and livestock is property as
yes,
well.
Yes, okay. Yes. And then there are, you know, in Maine statute and the Animal Welfare Act, there are differences between pets, between livestock. Horses are considered livestock. So there are some distinctions there, but animals are property.
And a distinction with livestock and pets has to do with other aspects of law. In other words, livestock does other stuff.
Yes, I'm not sure you want me to go down that road because you do know I'm vegan and I'm going to make the argument,
right,
you know,
right.
Cows are entitled to protection too,
right.
But that's not where we're going.
I'm just saying legally the laws, that's why there's a livestock versus a pet because they have their own, there's some separate things that don't equal pet circumstances.
Because livestock are used, so
right.
Their protections are a little bit less than a cat or a dog, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good.
Again, that's another show.
That's right. We can have you on every month for a long time. Again, 207-469-0500 if you'd like to pipe in on the show. It's been a wonderful discussion. So we'll switch.
Before we move on, can I add just a couple? I warned you. Fair warning ahead.
That's fine.
The other thing I want to point out to people is that, and I've encountered this a couple of times, that powers of attorney, you know, if I go on vacation, I have a pet sitter, my pet gets injured, I go to the vet. The vet said, "You're not the owner. I can't treat. Or who's going to pay?" Talk to your attorney or consider having some kind of, you know, plan for incapacity or absence. Positive attorney for pet care, that kind of a thing.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yep. Anything else?
No, I think that's it for now.
Well, we have Yo from Tremont. Yo, I've talked to you before as a guest, but now I'm the host, so welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Yo in Tremont.
How are you?
You have said repeatedly that all animals are property. I'm wondering if Maine statute delineates, or how does Maine statute delineate the difference between a wild animal and a domesticated animal? And I'm thinking particularly species which might intermingle or come into proximity or which could be made into pets, Canada geese, raccoons, skunks, or say, for example, a domesticated bird that decides to go feral, like a Muscovy duck. Thank you for putting on this program, and thank you to everyone for supporting community radio.
Thank you, y'all. We'll try to address that. There's certain levels that I have something to say about that, but legally, what's...
That's not really my area of law. When I talk about animals, I am talking about domesticated animals. And I haven't looked at the statutes in a while, but I do believe that non-domestic animals are not covered by the Animal Welfare Act. And because I think cannot own wild animals, that obviously that's a different scenario.
And some of the laws with regard to wildlife is that it's illegal for you to have a wild animal as a pet. If you find a wild animal, you're to take it to a vet to have whatever medical care and then give it to a rehab person. So there are some legal statutes with regard to keeping wildlife as a pet.
Right, and then there are some permitting issues and things like that. Right.
And then there's some hazy areas with the wolf dogs. That's controversial. and you can have that wolf dog as a pet, but there's some legal liabilities there and vaccines.
Ethical concerns and humane concerns as well. So, yeah.
So Yo made a very good point.
Right, which we probably should have made at the outset, but we are talking about domesticated animals.
We have Fred from Tenants Harbor.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you, Fred?
Good, good. I just came in a couple minutes ago, and wondering about the legal death the states defines cats and dogs. Do they call them companion animals or something else?
I have the statute with me. As I recall, I don't do animal welfare law as much as I used to.
Uh-huh.
I think they're considered companion animals or pets. So I think they're called, or just simply cats and dogs.
Right, right. Yeah, because I have my companion right here who means so much to me, and I'm just so thank you for the program.
Well, thank you for calling. And that is a real issue, is our animals are part of our lives, and the law hasn't caught up.
That's
as far as I'm
true.
Concerned.
Yes, yes. And I'm not so sure that there is a good way at the moment to you know, restructure the laws and reclassify and
because there are some test cases. California seems to be a place where you get a lot of forward-thinking situations where they're trying to, you know, that the animal can sue the owner kind of thing. That's so extreme.
Yeah.
But that's where you're thinking we gotta find a solution that's fair and reasonable.
Yeah, I think definitely things are changing. You know, we view animals not as much as property as we used to, and I think the courts are starting to recognize that in family law situations and probate situations. So that is true. That's a trend.
Anything else before we move on?
No. You may move on.
Well, I'd like to take a 30-second break. This is Dr. John Hunt for Pet Sounds 2.0. at WERU, and we'll be back on the other side of a short break. Welcome back, Dr. John Hunt for Pet Sounds 2.0 with my guest and attorney, Christina Perkins, with her companion, Rye, who is underneath the table. I can't tell.
She's
under a chair right now.
And who's a very lucky dog, and my gratitude to the Ark in Cherryfield, who saved her.
Very good. Yes, I saw Rye when you first got her, and she was not in very good shape, and you've done a great job.
Yeah, she was healthy, physically healthy, thanks to the wonderful folks at the Ark and all the foster homes in between. But she does have some fear issues because of how her life started.
Well, she certainly liked some of the people at WERU.
It's a very friendly station, we find.
Yes, very. It's awesome to be here. So let's go from one kind of a topic that's kind of sober to another sober topic, pets and divorce. Again, pets are property. And however, I've been understanding is because pets are becoming a significant part of people's families, there's some attempt to try not to just say they're property. When there is a divorce, pets become part of the issue of where they go. And the judge may have to consider custody for that pet.
Although the judge wouldn't call it that, but yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm just a vet, not a lawyer. But they look at the person who can provide the best care, the person with the strongest attachment, and sometimes the pet goes with the children. Those are kind of issues that that I've read that pet that judges can look at. This is not, okay. Well, I want to back up. We're talking about divorce in which the pet owners have brought the pet into a court situation. In other words, they're
You mean a contested divorce?
A contested divorce, right? Because the bottom line in my mind, and I think in your mind, is if you're getting a divorce, keep the pets out of any kind of contesting. Try to work it out outside the courts.
Well, that depends. I mean, here I go again with you. It depends answer. Well, you know, it might be that one party in the divorce wants to settle, the other doesn't. And so even if you try to keep the pet out of the court system, ultimately the pet will be somehow addressed in the court order because you need to have an ownership order because, remember, they're property. So there needs to be something, you know, pet goes. And I will tell you, in my own divorce judgment, and the judge, I wrote it myself, and the judge commented on that. The first line was, all animals, pets, and livestock go with Christina. So, you know, there has to be something.
But you can, before you walk into the court, you can say to
you can
partner,
agree. You can agree. You can say, absolutely.
This is what we're going to do.
Yes.
All right. You know, the dog's going to go to you.
Yes.
Okay, we'll write it down.
Right.
And there's no contesting.
Right.
That's the ideal.
Right.
Because you're going to have to make some decision because the pets are property.
Right.
Just like the but toaster and the...
But it's the rare situation where people agree where the dog goes or the cat goes.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It gets hotly contested. Well, you know, as you imagine, I mean, you know, it's people are attached to their pets and they don't want to give them up.
So once contested, now the judge has to deal with that.
Yes.
I just wanted this little quote, which is really kind of cool. The Animal Legal Defense Fund, in pleading to the court, say, we ask the court to consider the best interest of the pet rather than treating the animal like he's a toaster. And that says it all. But
yes.
The judge has only certain latitudes.
Well,
what latitudes does a judge have?
Let me back up. First of all, the folks at the Animal Legal Defense Fund are fabulous. They're based in California. And they came to Maine recently and did a continuing education seminar and are doing some really good work. And I think what that quote is the standard that's where we want to get.
Mm-hmm.
We're not there yet. Again, they're property. So they're subject to division as property, as all other property, by the court, unless it's non-marital. You know, if I have a dog, if I get married and Rye is mine. But that's not the reality. I mean, then you have joint pets and, you know, and so the judge can divide property. And I'm not saying pets should be property. I'm simply saying that's what they are at the moment. And I know it's a difficult concept to understand that they are property because they're living beings. But it really depends on the judge. I did a divorce once, which was very difficult, as most of them are emotionally. And my client wanted the dog. The other side said, absolutely not. It's my hunting dog. I hunt with a dog. I get the dog. And so we asked for visitation. And the judge called us into chambers, looked at me and said, you know what, Christina? Your client can get another dog.
See, that's the problem. Just replacing property.
Yeah, and have her get another dog. I mean, he looked right at me and he said, have her get another dog. And that was a very experienced family law judge.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where we're at. Now, I'm not saying that's how all Maine judges would rule
right, or
comment, you know, but that particular judge did. The other piece of it is that that same judge said, you know, I already have to struggle with the custody and the arrangements for the kids. The kids are priority, and I have to struggle with that. I am not going to have someone come to court to enforce a visitation for a dog, because then the parties, you know, the visitation rights, the plan doesn't work or something like that. I'm not going to have them use up the court time when we've got all these other cases backed up to argue over whether they should see the dog on Sunday or Saturday.
That's kind of a prejudicial attitude then of the judge.
Yes.
Okay. Now, if there is a judge that's willing to listen, one of the things that a person can do is present to the judge all the different evidences that they are responsible, they take the dog for the walk, they go to the vets, you know, I take the dog to the vets. The children are with me. I groom them. Do all is that kind of defense, as much as it sounds great, will the judge just say so? Or would that actually come into play as to where he's going to place the property?
If you get the judge that I was talking about earlier, the judge will say so.
Yeah, okay.
Other judges might be more understanding. You know, they're probably pet owners too.
Right.
And I don't know if this judge has pets. I don't know. But, you know, they might be more understanding.
Okay.
And be willing to listen to that argument.
So, again, it's the really the best interest of the pet is to get some kind of agreement and put it into the divorce decree and not have a judge decide.
Right, if that's possible, right, if you can work it out. And then just present it to the judge and say, yeah, there's pets, you know, in this, there's pet property, and we've decided to divide it as follows.
Okay, so, and using pet as power play and for spitefulness, that's the worst thing you can do for the pet. It may
Absolutely.
Make you feel better.
Right.
But it's not going to...
Temporarily, maybe, but yeah. It's the same with kids in a divorce. It's the same thing, yeah.
To get into a little bit of the veterinary aspect of this, I just want to...
Can I just back up?
Please.
Here I go again. Yeah. I just want to say that, you know, when you get married or even after you're married, you can do agreements, prenups, postnups. We've all heard about them. And, you know, you can decide, you know, if I get married again, Rye stays mine. I get Rye. We don't even get there. You know, you can make those kind of agreements, which you might then have to argue to enforce. But, you know, that's certainly an option if, you know.
Well, how ironclad would a prenup be if, for instance, you had Rye and you got married and Rye became your husband's best friend, hunting dog. They slept together. I mean, did everything. And he argues, well, he's really my dog now. Is the prenup preempt any of that kind of stuff?
No, because, I mean, it says, you know, she's my property. Now, in that case, I doubt that would ever happen. But
well, that, you know, it would not happen. Using you as a...
But, you know, if that were to happen, I might stop and think and say, you know, in all fairness and honesty, the dog really became my husband's dog. And if I'm the pet owner that really has the best interest of my pet at heart and not mine, I might decide, okay, even though I have the right to keep Rye, I will give her up.
But that's your choice.
Right. That would be my choice. Right.
If you said you didn't want to do that, is the prenup then your kind of your defense?
I'm stuck unless there's
If I'm the husband, I'm stuck.
Right.
Unless you say it's okay.
Right.
Okay.
You know, or you might be able to say, well, you know, there was some undue influence or, you know, something like that. But courts are not, I don't think courts are going to argue or let attorneys or parties argue about a dog, you know, a property distribution of a dog when there's a prenup, an agreement in effect. I just don't think they're going to use court time to do that. I could be wrong. Some courts might, maybe in California. But courts are so busy and so backed up, I just don't see that happening.
In your experience in family law, excuse me, how often are pets an issue?
A lot.
Really?
Yes.
So there's a lot of contested in divorces and are they used for spitefulness?
Absolutely.
So that's so sad for the pet. I mean, people really got to get over that.
Yeah. There are a lot of divorces that settle, you know, where the parties are reasonable and they can work together and they work it out.
But you see it more than we would think.
Yes. And it seems to be increasing, I think. I think, you know, reflective of the trend that we all, or most of us, consider pets our family members. And I think with that comes all the negative aspects of being a family member, you know, just like with children. You know, people use children that way in a divorce situation. Or, you know, it doesn't even have to be, think of unmarried couples splitting up, but they have a dog
together. Same difference,
together.
As far as the pet's concerned.
Well, not really,
the two people are splitting.
Right.
So the pet
sees... whose property is it? It's not marital property because they're not married. So whose dog is it?
So what happens?
You have to argue over it unless one person says, okay, take the dog.
Well, can you go to court and argue over it even though you're not married?
Yeah, I would.
Because it's property's 99% of what's that?
Well, I mean, my argument would
be, because you own it.
Yeah, my argument would be, hey, look, you know, I adopted her. I've been registering her. I've been licensing her. I've been taking her to the vet. I've been feeding her. I've been walking her. She's mine.
So in this case, without a marriage certificate, that defense proving to
the argument
that you're taking care of is valid.
I would use it. Okay. I don't know if I would win with it, but let me tell you, I would try if that was my dog.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh,
yes.
Very interesting.
Yes.
And to complete this, I want to be a veterinarian for a little bit, unless you have something else.
No.
If you do, just tell me. I have no problem with it.
I'll come back for another show with Rye.
Yeah. And Rye can maybe say something. Divorce does stress our animals. You may see pets depressed. They may sleep more. They may lose appetite. They may groom excessively. They may vocalize, howling. They may even have a break in house training. So it really can be this emotional stress can turn into physical stress. Some of the strategies that the Humane Society has recommended that I agree with, when your home is breaking up, to help your pet is to make sure you take your pet to the veterinarian if you're seeing something wrong. Rule out a physical, actual health problem. Play with your pet daily. Spend alone time with them. Keep multi-pet households together instead of dividing them up. If there's two or three dogs, you should try to keep them together. This is from a veterinarian's point of view, not a legal. Try to keep the pet with the children in the same house.
As I'm listening to you, I'm lining up my arguments for the next divorce where I have to argue over the custody. So thank you.
Oh, good.
Going.
Well, I can give you this copy here. So just try to keep the pet with children in the same house and decide what is best for your pet. These are all things that we recommend in order to reduce the stress, because there is actual stress. And I've seen that. And people coming in, clients coming in with their pet, and it's definitely a social stress manifesting into a physical thing. Not eating is a big, yowling is a big one. Break of house training is huge. All of a sudden, their pet's going to the bathroom and the kitchen floor. And I start to ask what's going on in the house, and there it is. So just for all you pet owners, those are things to consider.
Can I add one more?
Please.
I would also add that, you know, it's important for the parties to take care of themselves, but I think the dogs feed off the stress of the individuals.
Absolutely.
So I would add that. You know, do whatever you can to take care of yourself so you can take care of the dogs and the cats and the kids.
So if you go walk your dog and every day and things have changed because of the divorce, try to keep walking the dog. It's a good example because you're still walking and the dog is still walking.
But I also meant, you know, more the stress of the situation, because divorce is stressful.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way around that. So also managing, you know, the human stress.
Okay, because that helps the animal.
Right.
They do feed off, definitely. They definitely feed off of us. Do you want to talk about, first of all, I want to say this is Dr. John Hunt for Pet Sounds 2.0 at WERU in Orland. And we are here talking about pets and the law with Christina Perkins, a friend and a lawyer, and with her friend Rye, who is standing right next to me now, sniffing the wall for something. For some reason, there's something interesting on the wall. I have no idea what it is. Oh, now she's going underneath the chair.
Well, you looked at her.
I looked at her. So we've talked about wills. We've talked about divorce. I'd like to get into an area maybe you're not you haven't handled a lot, but we can at least talk about it. Bites, dog bites, injuries from dog bites, cat scratches, and that sort of thing. Just kind of go into whatever you know about that. I know the main law is called a strict liability state, which means the owner of the pet that bit someone is liable regardless if the owner could have prevented it or not. Is that correct? Does that sound right?
I do believe that, but again, it's not an area of law I handle. My only comment on that is really, you know, dog owners, please do whatever you can to prevent those situations in the first place. If it happens, I do know the Animal Legal Defense Fund has a really good website for resources when that happens, and they do come in and sometimes defend dogs on death row for dog bites. So they do come in and provide, you know, some guidance, some resources for that.
Apparently, the where the animal is plays a big role, whether they're on the premises or off the premises, whether the victim provoked or not. These are all factors that come into who is liable, and different states have different rules.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess in Maine, when an animal damages a property or hurts a person due to negligence of the owner is liable, even though it may have been the fault of the attacked person.
I think...
Is that what, again, rewording
yeah,
strict liability?
Yeah, I think what I would suggest is, you know, again, try to do what you can to prevent a bite or any kind of other incident. If it does happen, I would call a lawyer and say, you know, my dog just bit someone fairly early on in the process. What can we do, you know, to prevent the dog being deemed a dangerous dog or to have some sort of, you know, lawsuit where you have to pay a lot of money to someone because your dog, you know, bit them. You know, there's homeowners insurance. They'll defend people at times, you know. So I would just ask for help, like, right away.
And that's a very good point of a dangerous animal is another part of the legal thing. And one, an old rule that Maine has rejected but other states still have is called the one bite rule, which the dog can bite is considered not dangerous unless it bites once. And once it bites, it's now designated as dangerous, puts it in a different liability category. So some states still have that one bite law, but Maine does not.
No, we have a dangerous dog statute that, you know, a court will follow, has to follow specific guidelines and deeming a dog a dangerous dog, that comes with certain restrictions. And but that's separate from what you're talking about. You're talking civil liability.
Okay.
Yeah.
And another category called a dog at large, which means running loose.
Right.
The dog owner's liable if that dog runs away and hurts somebody and comes back, even though it's you weren't around, that you're still liable because you own the dog, right?
Right. You might have certain defenses available saying, look, you know, it wasn't my fault the dog ran away. But that really gets into specifics, and those cases are so fact-specific that we probably shouldn't get into that too much. Because it's just really fact-specific because it just depends.
Well, negligence is another reason. If they can prove that you were negligent, like you never tethered the animal or the gate was...
Right, or someone called, or your dog's been returned by animal control 5 times in the
last
week.
Right. So those kinds of things, you build a case. Right. So you got to be a responsible pet owner.
Right.
Another example is, for instance, if a dog got injured during play, or someone got injured during play, you're not liable because it's contextual. It could be construed as just being play.
It could be. Right.
On the other hand, if a dog was chasing, I'm just using some examples I read, dog was chasing a motorcycle, and because of the chasing, the motorcycle crashes, then the dog owner could be liable because he caused,
potentially. Again, those cases, those types of cases are very fact specific.
So it'd be hard to talk on a
general.
I agree.
Really, really difficult.
Understandable. Well, one other thing to remember is the police and military have an exemption for dog bites, so to speak. But there's been some, I guess there's been some courts have been challenging that exemption. So some police departments are training dogs to bark instead of bite. Because a police dog bit someone, they went to court because the police department didn't have some kind of written policy. So a technicality.
Right.
So now
they're
training dogs to bark instead of bite, which I think is kind of cool.
I think it makes sense.
Livestock, cow breaks out of the fence, and of course livestock, you're liable for the damage.
Right. And we actually have a statute, in Maine, that says, you know, if I have a herd of cows and they get out and I get called, I have a certain number of hours to get them back in before it even gets worse. There was a case in central Maine where a farmer just let his cows run and he wouldn't come get them. So the statute was amended to put a time limit in.
Oh, okay. So yeah. You have time before they do any damage.
Well, that's not civil life. I mean, you know, if I then hit the herd and my car gets totaled and I get injured, that's a separate issue from, you know, the state says you have to come get your cows. I mean, those are two separate issues.
Okay. So it's really circumstantial. You have to.
Yeah.
Fred from Tennant's Harbor again, back on the phone.
Right. Thank you. I have a dog, and I'm thinking pet share, just like car sharing. With the internet, I would imagine that people in a town or city could cooperate and share their pets a little or a lot, whatever details might apply. This is an idea. I certainly would like to participate in a car sharing program like Zipcar or some other. And so anyway, I just put it out there as the way to have pets. Well, particularly, you know, say you want to go away on vacation, and you could have an agreement with other people to take care of your pet for a weekend or a week. Without having Tim to go to the kennel at the vet or wherever. Anyway, I'd be interested in your thoughts. Thank you.
Well, this sounds like the pet share would replace a friend or a neighbor or relative to take, like, house sit. It sounds like a more of a internet sort of situation rather than legal, and I think that there may be some merit to that. But I don't know anything about the legal aspects.
I've never heard of it, but thinking of sort of, you know, if it's more than what you just described, John, if it's a, you know, a shared ownership like it would be with the car, you know, I would have some very serious concerns about that because pets are not cars. We have an emotional attachment. They have emotional needs. So I would have some serious concerns, but I don't know enough about it, I guess, to really comment on that.
It would be interesting for the listeners to kind of keep an eye on that pet share thing, just see where it develops. It may turn into like an Uber thing, very successful, or it may run into some difficulty. So, Fred, thank you for bringing that up. I think we're always looking for new ways of helping our pets. We just have a couple more minutes. Do you want to talk about Rye a little bit for a couple minutes?
Sure. As you said earlier, Rye is learning to live a normal life. She is from South Carolina, and she lived under someone's porch, from what I've been able to tell from the ARC and her rescue notes, for a year. Was very scared, was basically feral. You know, we think that she may have been abused just because she's so fearful of humans, particularly men, but we don't know that for sure. She came north through a series of foster homes and then stayed with the ARC for several months until she got medical clearance to leave. And I just want to say, you know, the ARC really went above and beyond anything I've ever seen in what they've done for the dog.
Well, a lot of it has to do with you, too, and your efforts.
Well, I get to do the fun part, John. I get to do the hiking and the, you know,
yes,
the treats and the radio and those things. But they did the heavy lifting for me, I think.
Well, very good. Well, Christina, this has been very informative. Thank you for sharing your expertise in an area of pet ownership that people don't often think about. And that's what I try to do at the show is bring up topics that are kind of unique and special.
Can I make one last comment?
Yes, please.
You knew I would. Okay. I just want to say, you know, don't let any lack of financial resources stop you to make a plan. You know, think about it. Think ahead. It may mean giving back to the rescue. It may mean living for the pet to live with family, but make some kind of a plan, whatever that plan is.
Very good. Very good advice. So we're almost ready to sign off. This is Dr. John Hunt for Pet Sounds 2.0. I just want to remind my listeners to enjoy your pets and don't forget to give them a hug.
And you're listening to WERU-FM 89.9, 99.9 in Bangor, WERU.org, everywhere else in the world. We're listener-supported, volunteer-powered, and a voice of many voices. A couple of minutes to go before On the Wing takes off. Let's take a quick look at the weather. A slight chance of snow after right now, almost 11 o'clock. Cloudy with a high near 32 for the rest of the day. East winds around 7 miles an hour. And a chance of precipitation is 20%. We've got freezing drizzle likely, possibly mixed with snow and sleet before 1 a.m. this evening. Then freezing rain and sleet likely between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. Then rain, freezing rain, and sleet likely after 4 a.m. Patchy fog, otherwise cloudy with a low around 28 this evening. East winds of around 10 miles an hour with gusts as high as 20 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation is 70%, a very good chance of sleet and some freezing rain. So that brings up a hazardous weather condition, which is now in effect for tonight. Hazardous weather outlook for this evening. Not great time to run around on the roadways.
Support for WERU comes from our generous listeners. You make community radio possible. Thank you.
The Penobscot watershed drains nearly one-third of the state of Maine. From the headlands near Quebec all the way to Penobscot Bay, the Penobscot watershed serves as the backdrop for a significant percentage of Maine's history, economy, culture, and recreation. This is Natalie Springle from the University of Maine Sea Grant, host of Coastal Conversations. On our next program, in anticipation of the 2016 Penobscot Watershed Conference on April 9th in Northport, we will talk about the past, present, and future significance of this vast watershed. Our guests will be Steve Miller, the Executive Director of Islesboro Island Trust, John Banks, Director of Natural Resources at the Penobscot Indian Nation, Catherine Schmidt, Communications Director at Maine Sea Grant, and the author of the recent book, The President's Salmon. As always, your insights, experience, and questions are welcome as part of the conversation, so make a note to tune in Friday morning, March 25, from 10 to 11 a.m., when this month's Coastal Conversation is about the Penobscot watershed. Only on WERU Community Radio, 89.9 FM in Blue Hill and 99.9 in Bangor, and online at WERU.org.
Support for WERU comes from our listeners and from Waterville Creates, a consortium of community arts and cultural institutions, including the Waterville Opera House, featuring theater, ballet, concerts, and special events, on Facebook or at watervillecreates.org.